Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. An estimated 1.4 million fewer people received care for tuberculosis or TB in 2020 than usual because of COVID-19, the UN Health Agency said on Monday. Latest data from the World Health Organization, WHO, from more than 80 countries showed a reduction in treatment of 21% in the first year of the pandemic compared with 2019. The biggest differences were in Indonesia, down 42%, South Africa, down 41%, the Philippines, 37%, and India, 25%. The disruption to essential services for people with TB is just one tragic example of the ways the pandemic is disproportionately affecting some of the world's poorest people who were already at high risk for TB, said Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, WHO Director General. Ahead of World TB Day on Wednesday the 24th of March, the UN agency pointed out that some countries have already taken steps to sidestep the impact of the new coronavirus on the delivery of TB services. Successful policies have included expanding the use of digital technologies, such as computer-aided diagnosis and chest x-rays, which is particularly beneficial in countries lacking sufficient numbers of trained radiographers. To the Democratic Republic of the Congo now, where violence against civilians has continued to worsen, particularly in the east, UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet has told the Human Rights Council. Addressing the Geneva-based forum on Monday, Ms. Bachelet reiterated that North Kivu, South Kivu, and Ituri provinces had witnessed a shocking number of killings that may amount to war crimes or crimes against humanity. Some 3,000 non-combatants were killed in the eastern part of the country last year, the High Commissioner said, representing a 21% increase in documented violations since 2019.
Given the context of escalating bloodshed and the country's history of intercommunal violence, I am deeply concerned that the current widespread increase in hate speech could further inflame conflict.
The High Commissioner noted that violations had been committed by a range of armed groups operating in vast areas where there's little or no government presence, as well as by the Congolese military and police force. She also called on the authorities to strengthen efforts against hate speech based on ethnic, religious and gender identity to enable peaceful coexistence between communities. Climate change has hit the world's oceans hard, UN weather experts said on Monday in a call for a resumption of monitoring that was interrupted by COVID-19 and for investment in warning systems to protect coastal communities at risk. In an alert that warmer seas helped to fuel a record Atlantic hurricane season last year, along with major tropical cyclones in the Indian and South Pacific Oceans, the World Meteorological Organization, WMO, said that big geographical and research gaps remain in the global ocean observing system. The COVID-19 crisis made matters worse when in March 2019, governments and oceanographic institutions recalled nearly all their research vessels home. This reduced the capacity of commercial ships to contribute vital ocean and weather observations, meaning that systems could not be maintained and in some cases failed, the UN agency said. According to WMO, average sea level rose by around 15 centimeters last century, but projections show that future increases could be four times that by the end of the 21st, even if global warming is limited to well below 2 degrees Celsius. About 40% of the world's population lives within 100 kilometers of the coast. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is the Radio Free Kansas. Thank you.
Here we go. We've got John Grant on the phone. Sorry about that. You got the full 1975 title, Crime Jazz. The title, 1975. You got the full 2 minutes there, folks, because we were having a little phone problems. But we're on. John, you're there?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
That's okay. All right.
It's a little slow on the uptake here, I guess, but yeah.
Well, I was wondering. I thought maybe you'd had a wreck. You called earlier in the morning, and you were taking out. Maybe you wrecked his car.
No, I didn't wrap around a pole or anything. Some of the little domestic things. Had to go to the bank and straighten some things out.
Yeah, all that. Yeah,
you know,
right,
the goddamn banks during the...
Yes, I know about them, yes. But I agree
right.
At all costs. You know.
Yeah, right.
I never thought of The Wonders of Pain by, I don't know how you describe it, virtual, you know, automatic payment stuff, you know, where you...
Oh, right.
Yeah, my sweetheart, she does all, she's quote-unquote paperless, you know.
Right.
I still write paper checks and pay off people like the garbage collector.
Yeah, I do that, too. Yeah, I'm analog,
but that's not
the way back in the old world,
You're right, but that's not the way to be, John. You've got to.
No, I know. I'm learning that I'm, you know, if I don't have an iPhone and I do all the analog stuff with fountain pens and all that I might as well not even exist. Oh, wait, now somebody's calling.
There you go. There you go.
Well, we'll just have to let them go. Okay.
Just throw that out. Just throw it in the toilet. Well, no, don't do that.
They're coming at me from all directions.
Then you'll have to call a plumber if you throw it in the toilet, then you'll have to throw it out the front door.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to break down and get an iPhone or a smartphone or something, because I'm getting at the point my browser and my computer, Apple computer, is out of date, and the bank decided it doesn't want to talk to me anymore. And so I said, okay, if that's the way it is, I'll have to drive over there and talk to you, you know, okay. So I did.
Yeah.
And but, of course, I can't reach them by phone because in the new internet regime for all corporations and governments and everything, it's one-way information.
Right.
Of course, they tell you what to do, and if you don't do it, well, tough shit, you know. They have the power. Whatever you want, they have, and they don't feel a need to talk to you about your questions. And the way they deal with that is they give you no number to call. I mean, I went and spent 20 minutes trying to get a number for Bank America that I could call to find out what my balance was. And, you know, it's a long story, but I can't even find that out because my browser doesn't work. I don't have an iPhone. So, you know, I'm playing the violin here. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I don't blame you, man. I know the feeling. I just wrote out
the modern world, you know.
I know, I just paid the garbage collector. I haven't been able to pay him, you know, for a while, and I was like, low, and then I got some money.
Yeah.
I got rescued.
Yeah.
I got Rescue America came to the house, and I thought, well, I better pay these guys. You know, I've been chiseling. I'll pay them to pay the garbage. I don't know the garbage. I used to know the garbage collector. It was literally someone who had a company here in our county. Well, no, he got old, and he sold it. And he sold it to a Florida company.
Oh.
And it was – so it's all the way down somewhere in – you know, because you're from Florida. You've been to Florida. It's some weird company, Bobcat North America, you know.
Ooh. And where are they located?
Where is it, damn it? I've got a piece of paper here. It's it's on Automobile Boulevard. That's the name of that. I shouldn't even say this on the air, but they don't listen. somebody will turn me in. Just to cause me hell. And it's where is it? It's they've got offices.
Put over
in, Augusta. That's not Florida. That's Georgia.
Well, that's Georgia. Yeah.
That's Ohio.
Georgia.
Topeka. And okay. I got the envelope. It's all sealed and ready to go to make payment for these guys, these
all
characters.
Right. Well, that would make your
and
garbage.
I called job. Them up. Yeah, they raised the rates after when the old man sold the company to Florida.
Yeah.
Oh, Baton Rouge is Baton Rouge? No, that's not in Florida.
That's Louisiana.
No,
Baton
this,
Rouge.
Clearwater. Is there a place?
Clearwater, Florida. Yeah, right. That's middle of the state somewhere.
Yeah, that's where it's at. Yeah. Okay, so he sold it and they raised the rates. Now everybody used the old man. You know, because they knew him.
Right. Right, of course.
But when he sold it, they took over. And I got some hostile people. I called them up, and they raised the rates. I said, look, I just signed a contract a few months ago before you guys took it over and raised the rates. And I have a year-long contract for this, and it's $20 every 2 months less than what you're, charging me, blah, blah, blah. You know, I wrote a whole letter about it.
Wow.
And sent it to him, and I got some young guy called up. I don't know. I think they were like the mafia or something. He's like,
the mob has always been in garbage disposal. You know, waste management. Yeah.
And I said, I'm not going to pay this. And I'm carrying the contract up. He says, you's going to pay it.
You's going to pay it.
You's going to pay it.
Yeah, well, you think they'd have to honor the contracts of the people they bought it from, but I guess not.
They raised the rates as soon as they took it over. And, yeah, and I had a huge dumpster, you know, bigger than so I.
I finally
Jewed them down to give me a regular plastic dumpster, you know, just a regular plastic. Yeah. Can you do that? That'll lower The guys that drive the trucks that actually do the work are from around here. I mean, they didn't change. The workers are still the same workers. You know, we give them, you know, we'll put a $20 bill on top of the lid, you know, on Christmas time, you know.
Right.
But, those little nice things to work.
Well, that's real community stuff, you know, and that of course, that community world is dying out everywhere, you know,
and
thanks to the internet and all that crap, you know, the internet's not picking up your garbage, you know.
Right.
When I was a kid in Southgate County, Florida, we didn't have garbage collection. We were so rural that we took care of our own garbage, and we would separate the garbage from, you know, cans and all that crap, and then burnable stuff, and we would periodically, you know, a couple times a week, go out, and I'd be assigned to do that as the kid, and, you know, I'd go burn the paper in a 55-gallon drum out back, and then we'd go to the dump maybe once a month and dump all the other shit out at the dump, you know. And I always used to love to go to the dump, you know, because, boy, I'd search around the dump and find neat little things, you know. Oh, man, let's go to the – yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know.
I think that was the root of my thrift shop thing. I like to haunt thrift shop. Yeah, so nothing like a good old dump, man. Yeah.
Hey, we've got the Privy Hunter himself, Brother Mark, on the phone.
All right.
I think
Trucker.
You're on. Is this Mark?
Well,
this be Mark?
It's Shehel Digger.
it's the Privy Hunter, right.
So, Mark, what shithole state are you in now?
Well, I'm in Kansas. I am no longer OTR. I was listening to you guys talking about the garbage collection, and Mike probably remembers this. Well, we didn't even take it to the dump. we had 55-gallon cans. We just dumped it all in, burned it, and then when the 55-gallon drum rusted out, we just dug a hole and buried what was left of it and got a new one.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Landfill,
so,
you know.
Well, that's sort of like looking for owl houses. If you're going to dig around in people's backyards, you know, you got to be careful. You might find an old burn pit or a 55-gallon drum that all sorts of burned up shit. Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
So how you been doing, John?
Oh, I'm good. I'm still alive and everything's kicking and it's good. Yeah. How's the trucking business?
Well, I got out of the OTR and went back to a local. But well, it's just as screwed up as ever. I mean, there's you got to remember most of the truckers out there are Trumpers and
They
die hard. You know, there's, oh, he's going to come back. He's coming back April 4th.
Oh,
you know,
my
March
God,
3rd.
He's coming
oh,
back.
God. Yeah, you know. They believe that, this is no bullshit. A lot of believing that we shouldn't have two parties. It should just be one party. That's it.
Well, yeah, this is, I mean, we see it. People are fed up with democracy and, you know, complexity and science and all that sort of complex stuff that's worrisome. You know, they just, this is why we have the rise of authoritarianism in the world. Everybody, cut to the chase. I'm the boss, do it my way or the highway.
Well, the thing of it is most of these people who are complaining about it have never been out of the country. They've never been into it. They've never been to a dictatorship all across the sea. They never see a country how it really is when they live underneath that kind of system. I'm pretty sure I would safely bet that 80% of the people that complain about democracy has never been or lived in another country. You've been in Vietnam. You're a vet. You've been around.
It was El Salvador, the trips there that really taught me. You know,
well,
a place where you wake up in the morning and there are dead bodies in the street and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Tommy was the Philippines. When Marcos was there, it was a U.S. backed democracy. My ass.
Right.
You know, he had the longest standing martial law in effect. I mean, shit. When I was there, it was in effect for 15 years. You know, you got to be off the street till 11 o'clock. You always see some dead body floating down there along the Po River, which we call the shit river. And, and when I listen to these people talk about, we just need one party. It should be the Republican Party. And how that King Don was the best thing that ever happened to this country. I think to myself, matter of fact, I asked a few of them, have you ever been anywhere outside the United States besides Canada and Mexico? Well, no. Yeah. I go, you really didn't. Then I get ballsy and I tell them, well, then you really don't know what the hell you're talking about, you know? I mean, it can get really bad.
Mexico doesn't have the greatest democracy, that's for damn sure. And,
hell no.
Certainly Central America is very problematic these days. You know, and people are fleeing the place because there is no democracy, no government there. All it is gangs and murderers. And if you don't have any power, you know, you just want to flee the damn place, you know. And here we are up here, you know.
I tell these guys, these people that talk about having a one-party system, I say, you support the Second Amendment? Oh, hell yes. I got on my back of my truck, you know. I go, the first thing you're going to do is take your fucking guns away from me.
Well, that's
their...
No, they can't do that.
And I go, I said, that's exactly when the National Socialist Party came into effect. And they're going, what was that? What did that happen? The United States? I go, the National Socialist
Party. I remember that
party.
One, yeah.
I go, 1935, you know.
Yeah.
Germany. And then when it hits them, I'm talking about Nazis, and they go, no, you're full of shit. I go, no, especially when he did it. He took the guns away from the citizens.
Well, yeah, Benito Mussolini, who coined the term fascism from the thing that they carried in front of the magistrates, the fascis, a battle axe with sticks around it. Well, he coined the term fascism, and, of course, he started out as a socialist journalist. And socialism at the time was a big thing. Communism, of course, they're extreme in that. And so they came up with this term, national socialism. in order to market themselves against these real socialists, you know.
So, are you ready for this one?
Yeah. What?
Here we go. Here's the comeback I get, because, you know, they know I'm a Democrat, I'm a liberal, and they say, "Well, see, that's what happens when socialists take over."
What's that? You
become the Nazi Party, the National Socialist.
Oh, right. Well,
and
this.
And I said,
there's so much bullshit. I always quote Harry Frankfurt, the head of the Department of Philosophy at Harvard, and he wrote a little book called On Bullshit, in which he said the most salient issue of American culture is there's so much bullshit.
Yeah.
We want it our way so much, we'll just lie through our teeth and delude ourselves that it's our way.
Well,
it doesn't work, you know.
When I explained to them the reason that the Nazis confiscated weapons from private citizens, I go, because it's one man.
Yeah.
And I go, at the time, his name is Adolf, but we could use Ronald. We could use Donald. One man was afraid of people having too many guns. And the first thing Donald would do is take all your guns away from him so you can revolt against him. And, they go, they're looking at me like I'm crazy. I go, well, I'm just telling you that's what happened. You know,
right.
And I go, look what happened January 6th. And, of course, everybody said, oh, that was Antifa, that was BLM.
Yeah, it was
Black
Lives Matter and Antifa.
Yeah.
How much of this lying and bullshitting can America sustain? I don't think it's going to carry well over the next year. I think in 2022, I think the midterm is going to break the cycle of midterms. You know, going against the party in the White House, I think we're going to be learning so much about all this, the Ron Johnsons of the world, you know, who are trying to sustain this Trump lie, as they call it, the big lie, the Joseph Goebbels big lie. And I don't think it's going to sustain. So we'll see.
It's not.
Next year is a big test.
2022, I think you're going to see the American public, voting public, they're going to vote for people of honesty. They're going to vote for the person running. They're not going to run. I don't see Democrats or Republicans voting on a Democrat or Republican ticket. I see people going to look at the candidate very closely, a lot closer than they used to, and that they're going to vote for the individual. You know, they don't give a shit if he's Republican, Democrat, socialist, communist.
Right.
They aren't going to give a shit.
Right, he has integrity. Exactly.
Right, Jimmy Carter quoted best.
Well,
if I'm lying
Jimmy
to you,
Carter,
don't
of course,
vote for
came
me.
After Nixon, and you know they wanted somebody with integrity. Unfortunately, he didn't like to delegate, and he had some bad breaks in his presidency. And
well, I just like
to
quote
him. I'm a total Jimmy Carter fan, although. You know, he did some things that weren't good, but,
Right. Well, but like I said, he won me over with that quote. If you think I'm lying, then don't vote for me, you know. I love that. If I'm lying to you, then don't vote for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in 2022, we're going to see the American voting public, like I said, they're not going to care what party you belong to. They're going to look at you as an individual. They're going to put you underneath the microscope and really study what your platform is, what issues you support, you know, what your political philosophy, Mike's going to love this, but I really think we're going to see a lot of socialists. We're going to see a lot of socialists get voted in 2022.
I think so too.
Socialism.
You know, I'm not talking about Stalinism or anything like that.
Oh, no,
past.
No.
You know, socialism is not, I mean, it's historic, you know, it happens.
Well,
our culture is, you know, crying out for some kind of governmental sort of socialism
that
makes sense. You know, it's not going to be oppressive. It's going to. But I think the $1.9 trillion is going to be filtering down into the culture in November 2022.
People are going to ask.
Yeah, and there's going to be the
people
masks
ask,
are coming
why didn't
down,
we do this
you know,
before?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, exactly, exactly.
I mean, why do we
and
have
it's not
going to
be
now.
The big boogeyman, you know, it's not going to be Hugo Chavez and all this stuff.
No.
You know?
I
yeah.
mean, people are always asking. I hear it in the
yeah.
street, John. People are always asking, why
yeah.
didn't we do this before? I mean,
right.
we could take half
absolutely.
Of the children out of poverty, you
yeah.
know, and people are asking these questions, you know, okay,
yeah.
well, I mean, I hear it all the time, you know, out there
well,
while
you know,
on the road.
There's
young
all
people.
Sorts of good. There's all sorts of good signs out there. There's a wonderful op-ed in today's New York Times, and it's called "On the Real Bugaboo of Our Time." You know, the last post World War II period of what to do about imperial militarism in the United States. Well, here's this. By Jack Goldsmith and Samuel Mohn, their Harvard law professor and a Yale law professor, how to finally mm-hmm. end, quote, forever wars. In other words, they're really jumping on Biden. They're saying, look, you know, it's, you know, he starts out with Barack Obama saying a decade of war is now ending. It says he said 8 years ago. Then he went on to beef up the drones and all this kind of stuff, and he expanded it. You know, he said he was going to – a decade
right.
of war is now ending, but then he went and expanded it. Well, the problem is that, you know, Biden has that same instinct, and these guys are saying, no, it's time now to, you know, stop this. You know, Congress should end its long acquiescence to presidential arrogation of war power by affirmatively prohibiting unilateral uses of force except in tightly defined circumstances of actual self-defense. And, you know, it's a very logical piece, and it makes a lot of sense. And I hear all of my lefty friends basically saying this. But now this is on the, you know, on the op-ed page of the New York Times. This is not a progressive radical leftist idea here, you know.
Right.
This is like
no,
the
no.
mainstream.
Well,
yeah.
Well, I think what you and I and what we're living through, we're living through a
mm-hmm.
evolution of a philosophy and political science here. I
yeah.
believe that here in the next few years that our war-making powers are going to be, it's going to have to be unilaterally accepted by the allies,
yeah.
well, by the allies across the world, not us. It's going
right.
to have to be accepted. It's not going to be Biden or
yeah. Well, it has to be negotiated in the world. That's why we have to empower
Obama.
The UN
right,
again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The UN has to be the one that says, okay, we're going to take action, military actions against this country, human rights violations, or whatever.
Right.
Know? And I
oh, yeah.
and I think. And I think that's what we're seeing happening here. Biden, he's from, you know, Biden's a dinosaur. I mean, I like him. And he,
yeah.
he's a go-getter.
Right.
But he's
yeah.
a dinosaur. He's from, he's
a dinosaur,
what,
and he knows, I think he knows he's a one-term president. He's not going to do it again. And so, in a sense, you get this, the power of a lame duck. You know, he's not there to be reelected. I mean, the guy's so old, and he does have some issues of whatnot, you know, mental, whatever it
well,
is. Right?
He,
but he's still,
he,
you know, he's still together. You can see that.
He's still
and
sharp,
he's,
but he has
serious,
problems.
But he doesn't say a lot these days, and he makes short speeches, and it's, you know, he just... And, you know, he does his $1.9 trillion thing, you know, and he's got another chance to do this big infrastructure thing. And, you know, now because of the two mass shootings in a week, after January
yeah.
6th and the right-wing domestic terrorism thing, there's a whole new focus on that, you know, and gun control and things. So things are beginning to happen. It's pretty amazing. You know, and my good people, friends on the far left, you know, I just wish some of them could recognize this, that there actually are,
well,
you know, good options out there, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but you know that Biden just dumped the gun control legislation on Harris's plate. That just
yeah.
came out in the news today. He just dumped that on her plate. So
yeah.
she is,
well, it,
learned,
yeah.
you know, well, I mean, it's the most logical person. Prosecuting attorney for the state of California,
right.
strangest gun control activist, And so he just made a speech, and basically he just said, this is going to the vice president. She's going to take care of this gun control
legislation. Well, she is Asian, and Asians all of a sudden are now at the top of the list for a moment.
And I think that was a very political legislative idea, mm-hmm. good idea of Biden to put that on her plate. You're going to limit this bill. Yeah, but she has the tiebreaker in the Senate too.
Of course. Yeah. Well, that's the thing that Jimmy Carter didn't do. He didn't delegate. He tried to do everything by himself. Well, this guy, maybe because of his age and whatnot, and he probably is not going to run for re-election. He's fine with delegating. He's surrounding himself with people he likes and can work with, and you know they're going to go out and do it. And so he doesn't have that. Aura of, he's just trying to get reelected. There is a sense you get from Biden that he actually is serious that the nation is in crisis and the ship is tipping and we need to straighten it. And I'm sure there'll be things that'll be upsetting for me, but you know, it's a hell of a lot better than it was, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Biden. Biden knows he's a one-term president, like you said, his age. He's diminishing mentally. I mean, I listen to him, watch him. He walks very stiffly and very, very cordial, very, you know.
He does
knows.
Have a walking issue.
But he picked a hell of a vice president. He picked a hell of a vice president.
Well, I think by delegating to her and giving her these tasks, which I guess Obama gave Biden tasks too, she gets her hands dirty in this business, and then they run her in 2024, and here we have a
African American, Asian, Southeast Asian.
Well,
president.
we can get in this fine point of things like Obama. This is, again, it really doesn't matter in the end, but I don't technically, like Obama, she is not an African American. She is a Jamaican.
No.
She is a Jamaican American and an Indian American, but not that ultimately that really matters, I mean, enough of this let's get the politics right, the hell of the skin color,
Well, here's the deal about that. I'm going to talk a little bit about this skin color thing. It was brought to my attention by my number two granddaughter. She's seven.
Uh-huh.
And
seven,
said, sometimes the damaged things come out of kids' mouth.
Oh, of course.
And then we talk about black Americans, whites and browns and reds. And she was looking at an African American and held up a black crayon. She goes, well, Grandpa, he's not black.
Of course.
I go, well, you're right. He's dark brown.
Well, like you say, out of the mouth of babes, right, and you and I aren't white, for Christ's sakes.
We're flesh-toned.
That's the joke. Crayola flesh color, right? Of course, right? Why are you the flesh color?
All right. And so it got to sort of planted a seed in my mind. I go, maybe we ought to start calling each other what our ancestors are: European American, African American, Asian American, Hispanic American. Forget the color shit,
But to me, the point is to look towards the future, to get it right in the future, not to look at the past and say, I got you, you did this, or, you've been abusing. Yes, obviously we've been abusing, people of color, right? For various reasons, and class and things like that. We need to think more about class than we do race. And politics, about get the structural politics right, and the rest of it kind of falls in line, I think, doesn't it?
The European Americans, looking at our history and civilization, we were the meanest son of bitches there were. We were cruel.
you're right.
We killed everything and everybody. you know.
Right.
And
and then we wonder why all these people around the world don't like us, you know.
There you go.
We're the American exceptionals. We're wonderful. Our shit doesn't stink. Don't you love us?
No,
I don't love you. Sure, I want to come over and live in your mall-encrusted culture, but, you know, and all the wonderful things I can get and the benefits of your culture, but do I like you and what you did in my country? No, I don't like that.
But the thing of it is, in our country, in this country, you know, it wasn't just us. I mean, we have, it wasn't just the European Americans that changed.
Oh, no.
European Americans stole it from the true Americans, you know,
right.
And we brought the slaves over. I mean, we did a lot of bad things.
We did, and those are the two huge, huge historic crimes that the United States of America has not faced down and addressed.
And that's what we have to do.
They're so immense.
To get back into the graces of the world, we are going to have to, the American people, especially the European Americans, are going to have to accept the fact that our ancestors were assholes and did very, very bad things. And we are going to have to cut that. We're going to have to stop that.
Right. But, it's all because of you guys out west, you know. I'm kidding, of course. But, you know, my people came on a boat in 1630 and ended up in Boston. But because of the pilgrims were such pricks and they had so many hoops that these people had to go through, they decided, what the hell, I'm going to move west and we'll settle what is now Connecticut, right? Well,
right.
This, to me, my relatives were involved in this. To me, this was the first incident of leaping west of manifest destiny, moving west because Boston is just too busy and, you know, I need some frontier to tame and all this. So they moved west and set up a palisaded fort in Windsor, what's now Windsor. My relative was the town clerk. And two doors down from it was John Mason, was a military man. And they got so scared of the Pequot Indians, who were the baddest Indians around. I mean, these people were, you know, they used to stand outside the British palisaded fort and challenge the Englishmen to arm wrestle, Indian wrestling, things like that. And because the Indians had only lived with dogs, they didn't have chicken pox, pig pox or whatever, you know, Europeans had that stunted them, the Indian males were like a foot taller than the British. You know, they were monsters and athletic and scary, scary people. And they got reports from Jamestown that the Indians are attacking. So they decided to preemptively mount a raid with John Mason from the town where my ancestor was a clerk, and they went down the river, and they, in one dawn, they killed 700 people and burned down the entire town, palisaded where the Pequots lived. They massacred them, and all the braves were off on a hunting party, and so it was women and children and old men they killed, every bloody one of them. And, you know, this was the first, in my reading, first historical massacre of Native Americans in this push west to manifest destiny. And, of course, we end up in Kansas, and then we go to Montana, you know. And
that's the European way, huh?
Of course it is. That's manifest
destiny. That's the European way. I mean, that's what we did. That's what our ancestors did in Europe. You know, we just went
right.
and wait for the knights and the soldiers.
Yep, our destiny is manifested before us, and if you're in the way, pity you. You know?
Well, and that's what I think our younger people are realizing.
Well,
go ahead, Mike.
Let me just say something.
Hey,
well,
Mike.
I think, well, it's great. I mean, it's good to hear you on the air. But I got to run this line according to you know, these mass shooters in 2 weeks, you know.
Right.
You know, there one is a sex addict who's having a really bad day. That's from the police.
Give me a break. You know, come on.
Yeah, I don't know how to masturbate.
Why can't you jerk off like anybody else? You know, come on.
That's what I said. You don't know how to masturbate.
Pardon
and what
my
kind
French.
Of cop would say that? I mean, what kind of cop would say that as an excuse?
Well, I think that's a cop that's a cop that has made tweets, racist tweets, apparently. Yeah,
well,
he's not the most progressive fellow, you know.
Gentlemen, I want to bring something to light, and I'm not trying to be a conspiracy nut or anything like that. But I've been checking out these dates on all these shootings we had in March.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's been a lot of shootings going on in March, and every time there's a shooting, it's usually before it happens. After something is highlighted about Trump. I'm not kidding you. It's usually when the American, when they were saying how great the vaccination's going, the pandemic, the cases are coming down, bam, we have a shooting in Atlanta, you know.
Right. Well,
now they
you
come,
know.
They're going, hold on, let me finish. And now, last week, the district attorney, U.S. district attorney, saying that Trump is probably going to be held accountable for January 6th, facing prison time.
And for
bam.
Georgia issues and things like that. Yeah.
Right, and bam, here we go in Colorado, another mass shooting. And so I got my curiosity up, so I started checking the dates of all these shootings, you know, going on in March, and every one of them correlate with Trump, every one of them, whether you know, the district attorney of New York is coming after
right.
him. Bam, we had the shootings. Bam.
That's interesting. You may be onto something there. That's interesting.
And I'm going, okay, are these Trump supporters trying to, you know, lashing out?
Well,
you know,
the Georgia killer, and then, of course, the one yesterday, MSNBC has this guy. He worked for the ATF for a long time, and you know he was talking. He's been shot at a lot as a cop. He's a very progressive fella, a good guy, a good cop. And they cranked him up last night, and he was saying, you know, he's seen so many of these profiles of these, you know, loner sort of gunmen, you know, the combination of being socially inept and having guns, you know, is a
right.
bad formula, right? And that our copycatism goes on, but it's not a literal copycatism. It's like, you know, this inept, socially inept jerk sees someone getting a satisfaction and relief from their by shooting, and it just works on him in a way that pushes him, you know, beyond certain, you know, barriers and is up to do something like that. And so he goes off and he does something that's convenient for him, given his community, his circumstances, the guns he has, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So it's not a copycat in any political sense necessarily, but like you're saying, it may, you know, God knows, it could be that, you know, like, you know, what, Son of Sam was sent on his missions by a dog, you know, barking. You remember?
Well,
and, you know, so anything can trigger these whack jobs.
I don't think the whack jobs. I really don't think the whack jobs. I think that
maybe not. Yeah.
I really think my Mike said this to me. Him and I were talking about this, and I disagreed with him. But now I'm going to have to agree with him. I think these are lone wolves.
Okay.
I really think these are lone wolves.
That's dangerous. That's not good.
Well, maybe I mean lone wolf whack job. You know, I call myself a whack job.
Well, I'm a whack job too, but I'm not going to shoot anybody. You know, I'm not going to definitely go on. I'm not going to go out and shoot people because
right,
they disagree or... because the media is putting, you know, the media or the, well, better yet, the legal system is coming after someone I really admire. And
that's right.
You know, that's what I'm trying to say. All these mass shootings I've been from March all the way down, they all correlate with the Biden administration's doing such a good job handling the pandemic. Bam. We had six Asian Americans killed in Atlanta. Then, you know, the stimulus bill got passed. People are getting money. Bam, bam.
Right.
We had 10 people killed in Colorado. And so I took it back, and it's always like back in March 5th, we had 5 people killed in the mass shooting. Or not killed,
you're
looted.
Basically saying what this ATF cop is saying, you know, that things trigger these lone wolves, as you call them. That's fine with me.
Uh-huh.
That lone wolves who have, you know, could go out and buy a goddamn gun because they've never been committed to a mental hospital and things
right.
like that. And
well, they're doing
and, you
it.
Know,
they're doing it because,
so the,
they're
I mean,
doing
the guns,
it because it,
the guns are,
they,
I mean, really have to be seen as a problem here at some point.
Well, the guns are definitely a problem. But the reason these lone wolves are doing it is because there's a trigger effect that triggered.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're
going after the man, Trump, who I support and love. I mean, let's go back to January 6th. 450,000
right.
people showed up at the fucking mall and attacked the capital of our country. And
right.
and there's people out there really think that, well, I'm going to go out, you know, they're speaking bad against Trump, or they're going to arrest him. I'm going to go shoot people.
I can understand that logic. You know, that logic.
I think some of them feel like they're under attack. I mean, let's do some more numbers. We know from the cameras in the inside the Capitol building that 800 to 850 actually made entry into the building itself. That they've done a head count. 300 right now. 300 and around 350, 325 and climbing almost every day have been arrested. Now, I think what's happened is that they're moving in on the last, the ones they have 100 more outstanding warrants that are they're literally looking for people, and they're putting pictures up on them. And
well,
I think it's because I think these people that sympathize with these guys and gals are the ones that went all the way and occupied the building for a few hours. You know, I think those people are cracking up. I think that's my pet theory.
By cracking up, you're saying they're not going nuts. But you're saying they're breaking up. They're coming undone.
They're breaking up.
There's union and all that.
They're cracking up, John. They're going on shooting.
Are they on crack or? You know,
I can't hear.
No.
They're having a psychotic break. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough.
How's that?
Yeah, I think you're right.
And something triggers it. Now I'm just gonna tell you what I see. And Steve Bannon every day has a thing called War Room, 6 hours a day on Newsmax, and this is the heart of the hardcore. And
right.
he is constantly. 400 million abortions have been performed in China since the communists have taken over. That's literally what. China. He's into this China thing about, you know, we've got to basically go to war with China.
He's upset at 400,000 abortions, but he wants to go kill 400,000 Chinese. You know, like what? Wait, that's a little mixed.
That don't make any sense.
I'm sorry.
I'm just telling you that's a quote. 400 million abortions.
Yeah,
the communists put quote with China. But that's a quote.
Okay.
But the point is that he's inflaming consciously. This is another that kills me, man, about this January 6th incident. And I'm going to write about it. It's getting under my skin. You know, the billboard, I've talked to Mark about this. The day of the 6th, you know, you can go and look at the white VIP tent in the back of the rally behind the stage, and there's YouTubes of them filming each other of what's her name, Kimberly Guilfoyle. I can't remember if that's her
name. Oh yeah, I still
doing this.
Doing
this real sexy little jig. You know, we're getting ready to fight. We're getting ready to fight. And you know,
right, I call her the Barracuda. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and they say, well, we can't Donnie, you know, march Pete. Well, the Clarence Thomas's wife, bought the permit,
right,
the rally permit, and financed it. Okay, and it didn't say anything about a parade permit. Okay, and this thing broke loose. Okay, and they said,
right,
well, Donnie really didn't mean to do that. But if you, there is on YouTube, and you can, I'm going to still frame it, freeze it. But the sign, he's speaking, and it says March for America in big, you know, 20-foot letters. You know what I mean? That
right,
March for America did not show up until he got up on the stage. And to me, it was obvious he was manipulating these people to do exactly what they did. And, you know, and that's just people that
I think you're right. I think you're right. I don't
know. Oh, yeah, I know.
But had he really thought it out enough, I mean, that's the trouble with a guy like that. He's great at making things explode and go bang and look over here and watch the magic ball and all this stuff. You know, he's a showman. He doesn't think it through. He wanted to make a big shitstorm that day to empower himself, but I don't think he thought it through. And thought, what am I asking them to do? You know, take over.
Well, he's thinking it through now.
Well, he's thinking
because
it through now.
The DOJ just announced. The DOJ just announced today that they are going to charge these people.
Right.
Now, Mike doesn't like this word. They're going to charge him not with conspiracy, not only with conspiracy, they're going to charge him with insurrection.
Or it's a sedition, I think it was.
Yeah. Sedition, yes. They're going
sedition,
to charge him with
I think,
sedition.
Is the legal term, yeah. Right.
No, they're charging all of them.
Some of the leaders of the Oath Keepers and those guys with cami outfits going through the crowd, you know, those guys were very, very serious at what they were
doing. Well, they're definitely going after the guy who said, well, we're in here, let's just start a new government.
Right. I like that one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Make me
president or speaker of the house. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
I said, yeah, that's what he said. The guy said, well, we're in here. Let's start a new government. And those words and Donnie's words, the new DOJ director said he was just on about three hours ago saying, we're not only going to charge him with conspiracy, we're going to charge him with sedition. And that's another 20 years on top of it.
The classic thing is this woman lawyer that was, what's her name, Powell, who just literally yesterday, I think it was, told a judge that, well, it's ridiculous that someone would follow the crap that I was saying, you know. In other words, she was defending, saying
she
that of course it
was
a lie.
Was
anybody who's reasonable would know that. Well, and so they're all doing that same thing, you know. You know, the fact they're falling back on their own goddamn ineptness as a defense. Well, I'm sorry, it isn't a defense. I didn't plan to kill him. I hadn't thought that far, but I was going to just drive the knife right into his chest. And whatever happened, you know. Hadn't really thought it through. You know, I didn't mean to kill him. You know, and of course, Donald Trump is classic as say, Joe Blow, he's an asshole and a fool, but I would never call him an asshole and a fool, although he is an asshole and a fool, you know. The language with him in reality is so slippery, and he's brilliant at it that it's like
brilliant.
Catching mercury on the floor.
Man.
I don't know where the hell he is, you know. It's like,
yeah, let's not give him any kind of intellectual evaluation.
Well, I don't know what it is. It's a certain genius, though.
He's a con man.
Amen. Yes.
His dad was a con man. He's a con man. And what's happening right now is that the big sap's coming on his ass, and that's why we don't care much for old Donnie, because he's slow.
Yeah, I think he's losing ground myself, but...
And
you know, Ron Johnson
is that,
trying to hold the flame, you know, and all that.
You know, the whole thing here right now is that we're out of Trumpism, thank God, and he's been quiet. He's down Mililago. He's fighting a war down there because they want to kick him out of Mililago.
Yeah, he's Nouveau Riche. They don't like him down there.
Yeah, and he's got that war going on. But now the DOJ came after him, and now, just on the news, he's got to go to New York and give a, what do you call that thing?
DNA test?
Deposition. He's got to go
DNA
to New York.
Test. Okay.
No, he's got to go to New York and get a deposition. He's been legally served, and that goddamn governor is trying to fight it. I couldn't believe it. I go, what? He's trying to fight it. He said, you know, well, extradition, well, there's no room for his death. You just got to go up and give a deposition.
Well,
and
what a mess. This is.
Well,
you know, can you imagine, I mean, I love movies. I think, you know, we all love movies. You know, can you imagine in the future, you know, when all of this sort of settles out and, you know, all the 352 books that have been written about it have been absorbed and the documentaries and this and that. Can you imagine the stories that are coming, you know, movies, great movies in the future?
It's going to be a one-line sentence, brother.
A one-line
A one-line sentence. Did we really do that shit?
Yeah, right. Of course, I think you're right. Are you kidding? That's why that's why I love to watch movies like from the 70s, you know, and it's like, my God, is that how we lived back then?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah. Christ.
You could actually walk into an airport and walk right on your plane, you know, like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
I
don't get service. Oh, yeah. It's crazy. But, you know, our future as a country is, I'm going to have to choke on these words, but I'm going to agree with mine.
Go ahead.
Our country is definitely going to evolve into a socialistic society because, there's no way around it. No way around it.
I'm with you totally, Mark. There's no way around it because you think of the growing population, food problems. You think of the Internet, which has given us three and fourth dimensions like you wouldn't have imagined.
Healthcare.
You know, and it's like we're supposed to, you know, organize all these people with what, federalism and official anarchy? I mean, you know, you have to regulate and you have to control because there's so goddamn many people out here.
Right. You know, and the passing of this stimulus bill is just proof positive. It's just, what I'm looking for? Bread in the pudding. Because
that's a socialistic response. I hate to tell everybody, if I'm shocking people in Kansas, that this $1.9 trillion was an example of socialism in that what it did was it didn't bail out the rich like they did in Obama's depression or recession.
Right. Or Trump.
Here,
or
they're
Trump.
Injecting, it's like injecting, you know, fluids into a turkey you're going to cook, you know, and all this stuff in down at the bottom and bringing it up, you know, and suddenly, you know, that the spices are going and everything's going, the machine's working, you know. This is what happened after World War II when they, they gave all those soldiers education, they made highways, and suddenly the massive population of the United States was empowered. And it began to networking and did some terrible things, of course. And here we are, and it's a similar kind of position.
Here's a real life story for you. I have a woman that lives across the street from me.
Uh-huh.
She's got five kids. And I was taking the trash out today before I got in here with you guys. And she's standing out there, and she was Mark. And she came walking over, and she's had tears in her face. And what's wrong? What's wrong with it? And she goes, I'm going to get $1,500 a month in the next year. Because she's got five kids.
That's all they're going to give her is $1,500?
Yeah. A month for the next year.
Right.
Because of the child care credit.
Right.
$3,600 per child. She's got five kids. That's $300 a month. That's stretching it off for 1 year. And she's going to be getting $1,500 a month because she's got five children, $300 per child.
This is good, then. This is good.
Oh, yeah. And then it hit me, and that's when I thought about my brother Mike, and I go, socialism.
So that's why you're on the radio today, huh?
That's one of the biggest reasons I got on after I talked to the lady across the street.
Well, I think we pretty much talked it all today, Mark. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Like I said, Republicans
are
coming in on shit. Take care, John. Love you.